G'day, I'm Jack Roney.
And I'm Harry Colfer.
And this is the Genre Fiction Podcast. G'day, everyone. We've actually got a really special guest here with us today is Kylie Fennell. Kylie, how are you? And thanks so much for joining us.
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me. And that was a very nice intro, so thank you.
Yeah, and we didn't rehearse that at all.
No, not at all.
We had a bit of a practice session before that.
Oh, no, I just meant saying that you're a very special guest. I'm feeling very privileged.
No, you are. All our guests are very special, but no, we've been looking forward to having you on.
Nothing special about being a guest, but you're very special.
And again, for our three listeners out there, our very loyal fans, hopefully there's more than three now. We've got Kylie on the show to talk about writing fantasy fiction. As you know, we've started to focus on interviewing authors across a whole broad range of genres, and this episode is focusing on fantasy. I mean, Harry and I both sort of come more from a crime writing focus, so we're really keen to get your insight as to what goes on behind the scenes for an author writing fantasy. But let's do a quick intro for you, Kylie, in terms of your credentials. So Kylie has been wrangling words for over 25 years as a former journalist, practicing marketer, and now as a speculative fiction author. She has self-published a young adult fantasy series and other books under her own imprint, Lorikeet Inc. Kylie's creative writing has been recognised by several awards and programs, including longlisting twice for the Queensland Writers' Centre Adaptable Competition and shortlisting and wins in the Queensland Writers' Centre's Flash Fiction, the Australian Writers' Centre Furious Fiction and GenreCon's Short Story Competition, and several leading anthologies. So, yeah, again, well done on those successes there, Kylie.
Very special as well.
So you should account the number of times you call me special.
So, Kylie, maybe a good place to start is tell us, how did you get into, given your qualifications as a former journalist and experience in marketing, how did you break into writing fiction? Is it something you've been doing for a long time, or is it a more recent thing? Tell us your story into writing fiction.
Look, I don't think my origin story is as unique when it comes to writers. I was one of those kids who all I ever wanted to do was write a book. And I certainly wrote lots of stories when I was a kid, and always had a book in my hand and also a notepad and lots of writing stories. But I realized at some point that how do you make a, when you're 17, you're looking, okay, what am I going to study at uni? And I just thought, okay, well, I'll go and journalism because that's writing. So I went into journalism and then led to marketing communication, but I still never, in the back of my mind, I wasn't doing any creative writing, and I just kind of was waiting. I just like waiting for, what's this idea? What is the idea for a book? And I think it was a matter of giving myself permission to actually go, you know what, you can just do this. You don't have to wait for it. Something, a big sign. You don't have to wait to have all this spare time. You don't have to wait for anything. Just do it. And so I think I started writing creatively again, 2006, I think I started my first novel. And yeah, that was where I started.
Did you mainly read fantasy fiction? Was that your preference in reading, and hence why you went into that as to your writing?
I definitely have always lent to anything that had some form of magic in it. So the books that I read when I was little, I remember reading Arthurian, like King Arthur kind of story. Enid Blyton, I like every single one of her fairy stories, Faraway Tree. And I think that it's had like a little bit of magic. So I always was attracted to the idea of that. And I didn't set out necessarily to write fantasy, but that's where I ended up. And I love it. Just any form of fantasy. Like, I do write other kind of short stories, and I have got a couple of other manuscripts that are, you know, lean more towards women's fiction, but there's still magic in them. There always has to be magic as far as I'm concerned.
And I just got to ask the question, how did you grapple with the issue of, you know, you're a professional person, sort of making it known to the world that you're writing fantasy fiction? Was that an issue for you in terms of kind of wanting to keep it secret, or were there any reservations and sort of coming out saying, hey, look, this is what I'm doing? And what was the response when your work colleagues or friends found out what you were doing?
I I'm just trying to think back. I never really started talking about it till I actually thought I had something. So I did just chip away at it for some time, and that first manuscript, which I started in 2006, I worked on and off for that manuscript like probably nearly 10 years, doing my own little apprenticeship and, you know, going to courses, just fine-tuning, learning, fine-tuning, getting feedback, all those things. And it wasn't probably till I didn't start taking things really seriously till about 2017, and that's when I was ready to pitch it. And by the time when I actually knew I had a product I could pitch, that's when I started telling people. And I had no issue with professionally blurring the lines or anything. It was just more that it's just that intangible thing of, is this something I'm just like stuffing about with, or is it actually got something? So yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's that question.
And everyone's very supportive.
Yeah, that's great. And that's been our experience as well, you know, the people that are supportive. And Harry and I both talked about how, because of our professional backgrounds, police and paramedic, that we both had reservations. And I guess that's why I asked that question. You know, we had those reservations about coming out. So, look, we're writing fiction. But I know my experience, certainly you might, you know, comment as well, Harry, my experience is where people were overly supportive, and I had no reason to be fearful of sort of coming out and telling the world that I'm writing fiction.
I still have a little bit of angst because I'm still working as a paramedic and my fictional setting is still Brisbane and the fictional ambulance service by default reflects on the existing ambulance service because there is only one. And so that where I just still have a little bit of concerns. But as I say, as I've said in the past, you know, I think the horse is bolted by the since I've been publishing since 2016. If they wanted to do something about what I was saying, they probably should have done it a little bit earlier.
Okay, let's not tell anyone else about it. Hopefully they're not listening. Kyle, I really like what you said about when I asked the question about when did you start writing, and you just kind of said, look, you know, just start, you started writing, you've got to start. I think a lot of us as writers, we spend a lot of time talking about writing, but at some point you just got to knuckle down and write, don't you?
Yeah, it's so easy. It doesn't matter what you write. It's easier to work with something once you have words on a page.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what those words on a page look like. It's way easier. So yeah, I think, I don't know, I want to say a controversial thing. I'm not sure if writer's block is necessarily a thing, because you can always write something to get you through a block. You may not be able to fix the exact thing you want to fix right then, but I feel like the only way to, it's like flexing any muscle, the only way to do it is to do it.
Yes, I agree. I mean, that's something we've mentioned in the past. It's like you can't edit a blank page. You can edit a load of rubbish, you know, and fix it. I may even have to bin it, but at least it's flexing, you know, it's getting those muscles working and getting sort of stuff down on the page.
But at least a page of rubbish is progress. That's still better than a blank page, isn't it? Hey, Harry, I'll hand over to you. You've actually, now this is, I know again, we're coming over audio, but we will do a little video snip of this. You've made an observation with Kyle.
Oh, well, I was saving that one just in case conversation sort of dulled and I'd so how OCD are you? Just to explain those people, and I've got a book shelf behind me, and it's just anything, and it's all over the place. However, Kylie's bookshelf is color coordinated, so all of the books are lined up in beautiful sort of like a lineup of different colors that are all sort of going in the rainbow color. So we were all very impressed with that, and I thought it took OCD to another level. But any particular reason for it other than it looks pretty?
Look, there is a reason. I had to start doing TikTok videos as part of my socials. And to be honest, I haven't really stuck with that. It's not my preferred platform. Yeah. Whether it's great for anyone else, it's just not great for me. But I needed a background. And I was like, I've seen these rainbow bookshelves and they are beautiful. They are controversial because there's whole series of books up there and the series is split. Because if they're different colors.
Yeah, of course.
So, but the other thing is I'm a very visual person. Like if I see something, particularly if I see words, but also colors, it imprints some kind of memory. for me. So right. I actually can find a book because I remember the colour of the cover. Of
yeah.
So yeah, for you me, get screwed it over, works for me.
You get screwed over by those ones which have a different coloured spine, though. So
yes. Yeah, so Harry Potter split over different shelves. Yeah. Some Bridgerton books are split over different shelves.
Yep. Actually, I've got a question that relates to book covers. I was going to ask it later, but now's a good time to segue into it now that we're talking about covers, particularly for writing for fantasy books. Now, you've got some wonderful covers for your books, which we'll talk about very shortly. But in terms of how you visualise the design, obviously, I'm assuming you work with a cover designer. Is that correct? You have a cover designer that...
Yeah, I have got a professional cover designer, and she also happens to be an author, which helps because if you've got some money you can spare on a professional cover designer, I always recommend it. And obviously you've only got what you can spend, but if you can afford someone who does book covers, who's not just a regular designer but who regularly does book covers, it's a huge benefit because it is a different medium to designing a flyer or a poster. Because and so that helps. Her name's Jo Edgar Baker, and she's amazing. Anyway, Jo does these covers for me. But because I've got a marketing background, what I do is I write a brief for her. And that brief can be just, you know, sometimes I just put together a PowerPoint with really roughly, and I will find a whole bunch of images I like. Or I even create like a board in like a stock photo site like iStock, and I'll just go through there and create a board of any photos that inspire me. So I just click them, add them to the board. And then I also will find book covers that I like elements of in my genre. And I will put those covers, like just snips of those covers, into the same PowerPoint with any specific instructions. So she then has an idea of, she very rarely uses the exact images, but she's coming from the point of view of a designer, but she knows where my thinking's at, because so we often she nails my covers usually within one to two rounds of changes.
Nice. And do you find that usually is in sync with what you'd visualized?
Yeah. So I usually have a fairly clear image like of what I want, because, and this is really important, you should go into bookshops and look at books in your genre, particularly recent books. And you can also search for book covers online on Amazon and stuff as well. But you want to see what's on trend. So, for example, in the fantasy kind of my YA fantasy series, when I designed those, just single symbols were quite popular. So if you think of like Hunger Games symbol of the Mockingjay, if you think about the latest versions of the Twilight that have come out, the Twilight books, it's just a single kind of symbol on the front rather than it being a character, or rather than it being, you really want to focus on what's on trend for this genre. And it's completely within the realms of possibilities that you might want to revise your cover like a couple of a few years down the track to keep up with trends, because that it's like any fashion, and even the colors they choose. So, and the fonts, even the fonts are like, there's definitely trends that a book cover designer would be across that you may not be, but do your research. Yeah, check them out and choose what you like. So, yeah.
And is there a distinct difference, obviously, with the genre of fantasy? And we talk about the importance of the book cover to capture the reader, to give them a clear message as to what to expect from the book. Are you saying there's even a clear distinction between, say, adult fantasy books and YA fantasy books, or is it a bit of a blurring, or would you say it's quite distinctly different in terms of the cover design?
In fantasy, it's quite a weird, it's kind of an odd one, because a lot of YA fantasy clearly are read by adults, so you're not necessarily trying to appeal to a 15-year-old, but yes, there is a difference in what you would put on the cover, and it comes down to what signals are you trying to tell the reader. So my more recent series, which isn't YA necessarily, even though the character's of that age, the signals I wanted to send the reader was it's set in the Victorian England period. So we used silhouettes of people, like small little silhouettes of them, like and kind of borders around that were kind of flowery and like Victorian wallpaper. Mm. So you just want to, it's more about capturing, I guess, what the story is. So a reader doesn't pick it up and go, this isn't what was on the packet. what was advertised. So,
Okay, well, let's move on to the works that you published. Now, you've contributed or written short stories. You've done novels or novellas. So what, in terms of your published work, what came first? Was it, did you embark on short stories first in terms of what you published, or was it your novellas / novels?
My first published work was actually a short story. So while I was still chipping away at my novels, and I was probably getting pretty close to probably only a couple of years out before I was published, before I published my novel, that I actually started actively entering short story competitions. And me personally, I try to target short story competitions where not necessarily about the money, but the output being the shortlisted stories get to go in an anthology, because it's a way of getting published. And like often with these anthologies, you may not get paid and you may never see a cent, or you might win a small monetary prize, but it's more about the fact that your words are getting out there in a published space. So I entered a couple of competitions which was successful, and appeared in a couple of anthologies, and that was also some validation, because it wasn't me saying, hey, I'm just going to publish a book. It was someone else saying, yeah. And again, short stories are fantastic for just flexing that writing muscle.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think I'm trying to remember who it was saying that we had on as a guest, that was saying that, practice or put out short stories, because, that's definitely a way to go, because you have to hone down your story to the vital parts and make sure that it's punchy and gets it told really quickly.
Yeah, it's definitely a skill to have, and yeah, I totally recommend it. And what I also love about short stories and even flash fiction, sometimes you can scratch an itch for something. You're like, you know what, I've always wanted to write a steampunk story, but I'm just not interested in doing like a whole novel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes you can find yourself just delving into like a what if or a particular genre that you normally wouldn't do just for fun.
Absolutely.
And let's have it quickly talk about your book. So you've got two series. So I checked the pronunciation before.
Have you already forgotten?
I've forgotten. the Kyprian, Kyprian's Kyprian prophecies, the Kyprian prophecies. And that's a series, and also the Fae of the Crystal Palace series. Can you tell us a little bit about your two series?
Yeah. So the Kyprian Prophecy series is the young adult fantasy series, and I kind of compare it to a PG-rated Game of Thrones or M-rated. It's just not R-rated. So,
gotcha.
So it's lots of fights for thrones and power, but it's actually more driven by a main character who's there's a male and a female main character, but if you chose one, it would be a young girl who's trying to find her way in the world, and ends up thrown into this magic, but she also gets thrown into her enemies, has to go live among the enemy at their court. So and it just goes from there. So it's an epic fantasy. It goes over five full-length novels, Yeah, so that series. Do you want to know about the other one?
Yeah, sure. Tell us about the second series.
Sorry. And Fae of the Crystal Palace. I did a little bit of a pivot. It's still fantasy, but I wanted to do a romantic fantasy, and I just wanted to dial up the romance a little bit, and I also wanted to appeal to a little bit more of a old, not anyone would necessarily appeal to an older audience, but I know there's a large audience of adult romance readers out there, and I kind of thought this would be something that I would enjoy writing, but also there's probably a big market out there for it. So my writing comes first, but if there's a big market, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
So I knew there was a trend out there for particularly what's called gas lamp fantasy. So not gaslight, it's gas lamp. So if you think Victorian, Regency period, and I think that there were gas lamps. So there may not be steampunk, but it could be steampunk, but it's that kind of period. And I love the Regency period. I'm a massive Jane Austen fan, but also I love Victorian England. I'm a massive historical England is like my bag. I've always read like stuff from Tudor England, anything. Love it. And so I decided the Victorian England I was going to do, and I definitely wanted magic, and I knew I wanted fae because I've just been obsessed with reading about fae or fairies in recent years, and they are hot. Like, they are the vampires of 2024. They're just they're hot and literally hot. They're always actually very good looking.
So, I do have to burst your bubble about England though. There's nothing magic about the weather. It's cold and wet and very dreary. There's no magic there, I unfortunately.
I lived in London for a year and I loved it.
yeah briefly, yes, you can deal with London briefly, but going on the tube rush hour, oh my god, there's just way too many people. I did have a serious question though. Noticed that you have your own imprint. What does that actually mean, as in are you a self-publisher or have you actually set up your own printing press or whatever, or how does that go?
Yeah, so it essentially means I'm self-published or independently published, and I have published other books, anthologies with other writers under that imprint. So it is really owned for, it's primarily for my own purposes. I'm not seeking submissions from other authors, but if a project strikes me and or a collaboration with someone, I'll certainly use it. What it meant to me was I went through the whole wanting to be, well, trying to get traditionally published. So I went through the whole pitching process, got incredibly close a couple of times, but people loved what I wrote. Just not the right thing for the right time at that exact moment. And that's okay. And I kind of exhausted my target publishers and agents, I suppose, and just was like, okay, well, I'm a person who likes knowing how things work. I'm a bit of a control freak. It really appealed to me, the idea of being able to do it myself. And so setting up your own imprint or publishing thing is actually not complicated. Like, you just need a business name, a logo to put on the spine of a book. You could do it as a sole trader. Other than that, you're just setting up a business. That is all that means. But the mechanics of actually publishing a book, that's what you have to learn.
Yeah. I mean, I as obviously Jack's got his publisher that publishes his books, Hawkeye, but I'm a self-publisher, but I don't know whether I've ever called an imprint, but because my actual company is Harry Colfer Books. So it took me a long time to come up with that name. The idea is that it can be shortened to HCB at a future and then come up with a more natty logo and the like. But I was just interested in the way you were referring to it as your own imprint, as a self-published author. I guess most self-published authors are going to be having their own imprint to a certain extent, aren't they?
This is right. And look, because I come from a marketing background, you could say it's spin. It is spin.
It is spin.
I'm trying to position myself to the world. So I wanted someone to be able to pick up my book and go, it's indistinguishable from a traditional published book. That's why I really wanted the logo, and I didn't want it to be my name, because I want, when people see on the listing on Amazon, that it sees, oh, Laura Keat Inc. And some people never connect the dots that it's me, which. Yeah. I think it's really good for personal positioning.
Yes, yes.
I'm not lying.
I should have thought of it. God damn it.
You still can. Hey, Steve, I like the abbreviation. Sounds good. Get yourself a logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just jumping back into your books, Kylie, in terms of clarifying genre, I was always of the belief that fantasy stories are set in an alternate world. When we talk about world building, can you clarify that? Are your stories set in the real world, but just in, you know, there's a paranormal sort of fantastical element to it, or do you go off world?
A bit of both. So my first series, The Kipling Prophecy, is all an alternate world. Obviously there's lots of elements that you'd say, oh, that reminds me of blah blah blah, that reminds me of Mediterranean, or that reminds me of medieval England, or whatever that means. My latest series is set in a real world, real time. There's even real historical figures in it. But fantasy is not necessarily about the location or time. It's about, and I wish I could give you a really good definition that I'd studied for you, but I haven't. It's about anything that's not normal, if that makes sense. So anything, I use the word magic, like the fact that there's fae in it, that's a marker of fantasy because it's a supernatural creature, mm-hmm. Or a supernatural being. While there are scenes in my short story where we're in the actual fae world, my whole novel is all set, except for one scene, it's all set in Victorian England around real historical events. So, which is actually really cool. So you don't have to necessarily build, you still have world building because there's fantasy, you have to keep track of all of your fantasy elements. But there is, you don't have to necessarily create a whole new world.
Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry, we should have started. Yeah. Do you, just a standard question for me is, do you use software to do all of that or keep track of all that?
Like, oh, right. Like as in my, the characters and all. Yeah. So like you just asked, my first series, I used Scrivener, and I kept track of all my characters. So each book was its own, I guess, binder. I can't remember the words used in a project. Like, yeah. It's all in one place. So I only had to open the one thing, and it was all there, easy to find. This series, I've only done one book so far, and I've got a style guide, and I've got a character list with attributes about those characters. But now that I'm going into the second book, it's going to get a little bit harder. I am planning on building a codex of the world. This is going to be controversial because there will be authors and readers and writers out there who won't like it, but I do use an AI. I'm starting to use an AI tool for that.
So, wow.
Yeah, so there's one called Novel Crafter I've been trialing, and that's just so I can track things, idea generation, not for the actual writing, but just having, I don't know, a second person there to brainstorm off and keep track of things for me. Yeah.
Yeah, and perhaps this could be another topic for another day. That, you know, I know this is becoming very topical. That some AI tools can be useful for writers, and then there's, you know, there's the issue of to what extent do we use AI. So maybe we might park that because we could probably segue into a whole new conversation there. But I did have a question about your ideas. With so much content out there on film and in books in the fantasy genre, how do you kind of find your point of difference in terms of how do you generate ideas? I know you talked about before that sometimes certain ideas are topical and they're hot right now, or maybe certain topics are now no-go because they've been done to death. You know, vampires have been done to death, so the publishers aren't interested or audiences aren't interested. So do you worry about that sort of stuff, or you just go with what, you know, in terms of your ideas? Do you run your own race, or are you mindful of, okay, what other ideas are out there and how can I find my own point of difference?
Look, I certainly think, I start with what I'm interested in. So I would never say if you are fully into vampires and that's your bag, write it, because there's still readers out there and it could turn tomorrow. I mean, there's probably some very, very successful vampire series right now which have never gone out of vogue. So I wouldn't say don't do something because you think it's not on market. I wouldn't recommend writing to the market. I'd recommend writing what you want, but being aware of what market might be available.
Because that market might change, because as we know, it takes a long time to write a book and publish it. So by the time that, you know, there could be trends and shifts in the market by the time your book comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so exactly. And in terms of ideas, I'm just like a bowel bird. I just collect like a bit here and a bit there. And I'm like, how can I put those things together? And sometimes they come together pretty quickly. Often it comes through research, like I'll just fall down a little bit of a rabbit hole. So this whole series grew out of, I knew I wanted to do something in Victorian England. And I was like, but Queen Victoria ruled for a very long time. So what period do I choose? And I just spent a bit of research. I'm like, oh, the Great Exhibition occurred in 1851 and this magnificent building made out of glass, which was just a architectural kind of brand new thing they'd ever done, called the Crystal Palace, was built and for this exhibition. And then like, wow. And then I fall down a rabbit hole, and then you start reading about some of the exhibits and you're like, and very, it's one of those things like, you know, the truth is stranger than fiction. Some of the things that happened or some of the exhibits there. And I need to start parking. Oh, okay. There's this Kohinoor diamond, which is quite controversial, and I could somehow incorporate that. And there was actually used some of the historical characters. So the gentleman who designed the Crystal Palace, he appears as a character on my book. And so, but I am a bowerbird. If I see something, I'll often just file it away for how can I use that later for something. And just the other day, I was at a library on Saturday and I was waiting to run a workshop, and I noticed it's a history magazine on the shelf, and I just was flicking through it, and I just came across this photo of these, they were like renegades or sheriffs or something back in the 19th century in America. But the photo of them, they literally looked like a bunch of rat bags that I'd see down at Carindale Westfield. They were just so, they were just, the look, and I'm like, is this even, I felt it looked like a modern photo to me because it was just so full of character and cheek. And I'm like, wow. And these guys were the law. So I took a photo of this and I'm like, I'm going to use it somehow. I think I'm playing around with a short story, like maybe a series of short stories. I'm just having a little play around with something. I want to do a Wild West based in Australia, and I'm just playing around with it.
Yeah, and there's been magic. With magic, yeah, and romance.
No, and yes, all of above.
And there's been a few retellings of the Ned Kelly, the Kelly Gang kind of story. I know there's a few books out that have done a reimagining, a retelling. So, yeah, interesting. Actually, I do have another question in terms of we sort of touched on before about world building. But in terms of your writing process, given that with particularly fantasy and other subgenres, that the setting is very important, it's probably another character in the book. When you're writing, are you just getting the story down first and then coming back and adding layers to it to add depth with your setting? Or do you find that you're doing your research and building your setting and your world building as you're writing?
I often will research something to the nth degree before I write a single word. And then the key with any world building or research is knowing every single detail of your world and your research, but only putting some of that in print. You're not painting the entire picture for the reader. You're just giving them enough details, like enough little signposting throughout the book that they know what period they're in. They know what enough magic that they can do that without you having to describe everything to them or too much exposition. So, but even so, as I write, I do have to very often jump out of the story and check something. So, for example, my character needed to get post a letter. And I'm like, okay, in 1851, did they have post boxes or mailboxes? The red mailboxes? No, they had none in 1851 in England. Like, oh, okay. So I do like to be accurate, particularly when I'm in a historical period. And even in my other series, which is not, it's an alternate world, but there's rules of nature still. So, for example, there was some kind of harvest festival, and where that place was located, they would have certain types of food there. They're not going to have tropical fruit. They're going to have certain food. So I do like to resolve those things then and there, though, when I hit them. I don't like to just insert detail here. That's not how I write. That works for some people, but I like to write clean and just keep moving.
But you've presumably done a lot of plotting before you get to that point.
I'm a massive plotter.
How many spreadsheets?
OCD. it's not a spreadsheet. It's at the moment it's a Google Doc, and it's based on Save the Cat, 3-act structure with 15 beats.
Wow.
Okay, very technical.
Is it color coordinated as well?
No, but I think I might start introducing that.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's just an idea.
But isn't that whole research thing a real trap? You know, we can start searching. I've done it before. Spent hours YouTubing in the, you know, saying that I'm researching. But you can suddenly go down those rabbit holes in the name of research. And sometimes you've got to pull yourself out there and keep writing. We can use it as an excuse not to write sometimes, can't we?
Absolutely.
I have to give myself hard deadlines, and it's easy for me because whenever I finish a book, I want to promote the next book in the back matter of the previous book. So at the back, when they get to the back of the previous book, I want them to have a clickable link if they're in an ebook, or they can go somewhere and see books coming. So to do that, it needs to be a pre-order on Amazon. And if you create yourself a pre-order on Amazon, it's a hard deadline, because you can have wriggle room, but I think they'll only give you like one chance. And then if you do it again, no more pre-orders ever.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I find that useful, but yeah, falling down a rabbit hole. Yeah. I think I drive my family and friends crazy, because when I do like really get involved in some research and I find out things that I think are incredibly interesting, some people don't find them interesting.
But I like the comment you make that it's important just to kind of flagpost, signpost the bits of relevant information. I know as authors, when you've done a whole ton of research, we want to impress our reader about how smart we are and how much we've learned through our research. And we want to do pages and pages of exposition, because, well, I've researched it. I'm going to share all this new knowledge.
I'm going to tell you everything I've learned.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think a good structural edit will identify those areas where they say, look, just cut it all out and just add breadcrumbs, little tidbits of information, and move on.
Yeah, exactly. That you have to do it that way. Too much research. Yeah, it's dangerous, but I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Look, I've got another question in terms of overall themes. Do you, when you write, are you focused on just telling, you know, providing escapism and a good yarn for your reader, or do you have an underpinning theme? Like an example, I know an author who has got an underpinning theme about climate change, because there's a fantasy story about these people that live under the ocean, and there's the land dwellers, and there's interaction, and set in behind that is issues around, you know, wasting of resources and climate change. Do you embark on those kind of more deeper themes, or you're just more focused on that escapism and telling a good story?
Look, I definitely explore themes that I'm interested in. It doesn't necessarily drive what the story's going to be, because as an ex-journalist, the yarn always comes first. And the characters are often what comes to me first as well. But naturally, I do explore themes just of things I'm interested in. And what I love about fantasy is you can explore themes without, not doing it in a sneaky way, but without coming across as lecturing or beating someone over the head about something. It's just exploring it through the character's experience. So for me, my stories are lead characters are often women, and they're always kicking butt, metaphorically or physically. And because it's set in medieval world in Victorian England, there's some patriarchal themes, because women aren't supposed to do certain things in those eras. So I certainly explore that. But yeah, just it's a fairly light touch. People obviously pick up on it, but it doesn't pull them out of the story. And another thing I have examined, and why I guess I started, why young adult fantasy in particular I've written about, is that first series touches on YA books are often about, it's about coming of age story, but it's about a person who's that transition from young person into an adult, and all the things that happen, and trying to find where they belong in that world. And belonging and identity is something that I often kind of delve into, and that's probably driven a little bit by the fact that my background is, my cultural background is, I'm Australian with a European background, and I got all my looks from my Irish background, my Irish grandfather. But on my father's side, his family's Aboriginal, and I don't look anything like that side of the family. And my lived experience has been a very white Australian experience. But my grandfather, Anjalung and Gumbangir, and my grandmother was Tamilaroi. So three different clans in northern New South Wales. And for me, I am connected to country, and I am connected to my family who are still there and identify, and have lived a different experience to me. But I've always, it's something that I continually kind of, I'm very conscious of sticking in my own lane, but also being able to explore some of those. Where do I fit? And yeah, what can I put my hand on my heart and say who I am? But I do want to connect somehow to some of this heritage without in an authentic way. Without,
yeah.
So I find it really challenging. But I've written some short stories that have been inspired by my family and some of my family members, and yeah, that's kind of how I do it.
So it sounds like your writing has been a bit of an exploration of your own journey and your own sort of heritage.
It certainly has, because I'm doing a lot of family history research in the background as well, because we've lost a lot of family history, and a lot of our grandparents didn't necessarily talk a lot about their heritage for valid reasons of things happening in the country at that time. And if you could get away with saying maybe you were of another cultural background, perhaps you might. So maybe you might say you're Italian, or maybe you might say that you're this. Or there's a lot of stuff to unpack. And I have got the big novel that I want to write, which is loosely based on my family history, but it will have magic. It's definitely got magic in it. I've plotted the whole thing out, but I'm just not ready to write it yet, because yeah, I really need to explore and get to come to some resolution myself, because it needs to be done in a way that's authentic and sensitive to my family, but also people who haven't had some of the privilege that I have.
And just sort of segueing from that, in terms of, so you've got a new manuscript that you're working on. I've got a broader question around the idea of writing novellas versus a longer length novel versus a series, which, say, for example, some fantasy books might be quite a large word count, 120,000 words, for example. I just want to get your thoughts around, you know, dividing those larger works into, say, smaller novellas, and are there benefits in doing that? When, and I guess it's a double-loaded question, when you're writing a manuscript, are you already thinking that this is going to be a large story that I'm going to kind of slice up into a series? So can you just kind of just talk us through that, how you kind of structure your manuscript? Again, thinking, is it a series? Is it one large work that's going to be broken up?
Look, there's so many ways to do this or to answer that question, I think. My experience, my very first book, I just wrote it without knowing anything, without understanding that if you're writing commercial or genre fiction, there's certain beats you need to hit. You need to have a midpoint, and you need to have something, an inciting incident. You need all to hit all these certain beats if you want to meet the reader's expectations. And when I go back and look at my, what would have been a 120,000 word story, it wasn't hitting those beats. And then what I realized was the midpoint was happening way later in the book than it should have. And then it's like, so as I went on, I learned that I would need to split that up. And that meant coming up with subplots and coming up with a new midpoint and coming up with a new satisfactory conclusion. Because with a series, you want to leave people hanging, but there needs to be some resolution of some of the storyline as well. So there needs to be a reason to go on to book two and a thread that goes through the whole series, but there needs to be some resolution.
When you wrote your two series, did you deliberately write it as a series? Did you know that these are going to be a series of books? So that was the plan right from the onset?
Look, I knew they would both be series. The first one, I didn't know how many books it would be. In the end, I knew that I wanted one for each element. So there's one about fire, there's one about water, there's one about earth, there's one about ice. So I knew that's how I ended up knowing how many books I wanted. But that kind of happened organically, how many books. I knew it would be a series, and particularly after I knew I had to cut down that book, because as a first-time author, and particularly if you want a traditional publisher, there's just no way. Well, I'm not saying it's impossible, because there's certainly outliers, but you have to think about the thicker the book, the more space it takes up on a shelf in a bookshop. So a traditional publisher has to fight for the space on a bookshelf, and fantasy books are often longer, and sci-fi, anything that's got a lot of world building, and particularly if they have multiple points of view characters, so chapters are written from different characters' point of views, they will be longer by nature. But anything above 100,000 for a fantasy novel is putting you into dangerous waters if it's the first book in the series.
And your books in your series, are they novellas or are they longer word novels?
Oh, sorry. My first series, I have got a novella, but it's more a companion story. Book one is about 100,000, and then by the time I got to book two, I think went a little bit over 100, and then they're anywhere between 90 something and 100 something, like 104 kind of thing. So they're all in that range, and then I have a book zero, which is a prequel, and it's sitting more at about 85 or something. So anything between like 80 and for fantasy and just over 100 is probably okay. But for the first book in the series, you can get away with a bit more for those following books, but you are asking a lot of the reader. And if you are after a traditional publisher, they may balk at something that's much longer.
Mm. Okay, and look, we are actually, time's gotten away on us. So
I was going to say, if we do this much longer, we're going to have to put this one into a series.
Yeah. quick question: I have been told that fantasy readers can be voraciously loyal if they find an author where they love the stories and the series, that they are very, very loyal, and there's a particularly strong market in ebooks. What are your thoughts on those sort of issues in terms of loyalty and whether fantasy sits stronger in an ebook form?
My observations would be that yes, they can be quite ferocious. They don't tend to read as many books as, say, romance authors who are romance readers who physically read more books, because often the fantasy books are denser and longer, but they do like to see their way through to the end of a series, and they will get super, super invested in your world and your characters, and they'll want to know, how do I pronounce that character's name? Even though they're reading it, they want to know, and love those super fans. And ebooks, look, I don't really have much of a point of comparison. Certainly fantasy is strong in the ebook market as well as romance. It's behind romance, but not far. I guess independent indie authors are relying more heavily on ebooks, and it's less of a risk for a reader to buy from an ebook than to go and buy a physical book, because it's cheaper. So it's kind of, I don't know which one feeds into what, but generally speaking, if you're an independent author and you're writing fantasy, your e-sales are going to be generally stronger than your paperbacks.
Okay. And look, we do have to wrap up, but I do have one final question. Yeah. If you were to give a couple of bits of advice, a couple of golden nuggets for emerging writers who are embarking on writing fantasy, do you have any sort of golden pieces of advice for those people?
Look, do your research, and even if the research is you figuring out what you want from your world to look like, world building is absolutely key in this, and the law of magic, like what are the rules in that universe or that world that can't be broken. So there's genres like magical realism or fabulism where there are no rules. It's just because magic. But most fantasy books, there needs to be some rules. So, yeah, like if can humans see their pointed ears, a fae's pointed ears? No, they can't. Okay? If we're going to break that rule, we need to know how we're going to break that rule. So okay. you have to have your rules really clear in your mind, and having like a codex or keeping track of it is really important, because readers will call you out on it, and that's what makes it, I guess, real. Yeah.
All right. I think that's a really good place to finish here. Now, if people would like to reach out to you and maybe speak to you about some of the workshops, now, just to flag, we're going to stay with you, and there's going to be another episode with you where you're going to be talking about marketing and helping authors build their author profile. So if our listeners stay tuned, the next episode, which will drop next week, will be Kylie talking about marketing for authors. But where can people reach out to you? Where can they find you? So a bit of a plug, where's your website and your social media?
Well, yep, you can find me on my website, which is Kylie Fennell, F for Freddie, E-double-N-E-double-L, kyliefennell.com, so kyliefennell.com. And my socials, I'm on most of the platforms under Kylie_Fennell or Fennell, or Kylie Fennell Author on Facebook. So if you'll find me in all of the places, and please connect with me. I'm more than happy to chat or answer any questions.
Cool. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for making yourself available. And we'll be sure to include those details in the podcast, the links and so on. Harry, Kylie, thanks so much. It's been a great chat. And let's call it quits. And we'll chat soon again, Kylie. So again, for everyone can stay tuned for next episode with Kylie and talking about marketing for authors. Thanks, everyone. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now.